Welcome back, Gemmers, and thank you so much for listening in on this conversation. With me today is Dr. Ravi Iyer, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about who he is, and then we're going to have a powerful conversation today. Dr. Ravi Iyer is a physician scientist, inventor, author, and entrepreneur. Dr. Iyer is a transdisciplinary polymath who has traveled from the medical colleges on the banks of the Ganges to the rearview ivory towers of Harvard Medical School. He has been a hospice director, a hospital and hospital chairman, the founder of the Iyer Clinic, and the director of clinical research of a medical group. Dr. Iyer's writings focus on the intersection and interactions of social events with people as metrics of health in society. His extensive background of over 40 years in the fields of medicine and science and deep insight into the human condition puts him in a unique position to speak about these issues with clarity, incisive depth, and deep compassion. His passion is educating and advocating for a balanced understanding and stewardship of our life and world in a manner that allows for an all-around growth and health for all creatures and populations. And without further ado, I want to welcome the man, the doctor behind it all, Dr. Ravi Iyer. Welcome to Gems Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Amaris. It was a pleasure to be here today. Looking forward to our discussions.
My pleasure. And I want to give you the chance to connect with the audience in a fun and personal manner. We could either do that by a rapid fire 10 question game or an icebreaker. What are you in the mood for?
You pick. It's okay. Either way is fine.
Okay, we're going to do rapid fire with Dr. Ravi. So, let's go, y'all. Question number one, what made you get into the medical field?
I want to just contribute to people. That's it. I made the decision when I was 12 years old.
Wow. Question two. If you had the opportunity to trade places with anyone or remain yourself, would you trade places with them for 24 to 72 hours?
No, myself. No one is better qualified.
Question three. Do you speak any other languages?
I speak three. I speak Hindi, I speak Tamil, and of course English. I can understand a few more.
Okay. So I'm going to make this question four. Can you teach us how to say hello or a common phrase in Hindi?
Namaskar is in Hindi, which means welcome. A common Namaskar. Phrase. Namaskar.
Namaskar.
Namaskar. Okay. Namaskar. K-A-R.
Namaskar. Did I get it? Okay.
Namaskar means welcome.
Okay, so guys, ladies, you learned something new there. So if you travel around the world and Hindi is that language, you can now say welcome. Question five, when did you write your first book?
Oh, just this year. This is my first book. I've written a lot of essays before. I was always a very good writer, right, from school. I was known for that, but this is the first book I wrote. I started writing this book, Reaper's Dance, on December 10th of 2022. I finished the manuscript on February 11th of 2023, about 60 days later. I tinkered it out with it for about another 2 months or so, and then I published it.
That is amazing, and congratulations on your first book. Question six. What's one piece of advice you would give to your younger self or the new generation?
Don't be in a rush. Take your time. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Don't be in a rush and take your time.
You have all the time you want in the world to win. There's no rush at all.
That's great advice. Question seven. What's your favorite color?
Oh, blue.
Oh, yes, mine too. Question eight. What is your drink of choice? Coffee, tea, or something else?
Coffee.
Okay. Coffee. Question 9. If money was no option and you could go anywhere around the world, where would you be headed?
It's a place in South India called Thiruvannamalai. It's a mountain town. I would go there. There's a monastery there that I go, that I check out from the rest of the world when I go there.
Oh, okay. Is that the time for you to connect into your internal self and shut the world off to just regenerate?
Yeah, that's my place. That's my battery recharging place.
Okay. And what's the name of it, Dr. Ravi?
Thiruvannamalai. It's spelled as T-I-R-U-V as in Victor, A-N-N-A-M-A-L-A-I.
Okay, Thiruvannamalai.
Thiruvannamalai.
Okay, I'm going to have to practice that. I totally just butchered that, y'all, but give me some grace. I'm West Indian and Caribbean descent. Question 10. This is the pass or play question, and here are the rules. If you pass, our roles are reversed, and you can ask me a question. If you play, I ask one last question to wrap up rapid fire. So are we passing or playing?
We'll pass.
Okay. What is your question for me, Dr. Ravi?
How long have you been doing this podcast?
I've been doing it since November 2020, and I started it after my dad passed suddenly.
Now this is the second question.
Okay, what's the second question?
Why?
I just, it was a dark place in my life, losing my dad. My dad and I were super close. And I just wanted to, you know, get outside of the grief journey. And just, I got tired of talking to people and they said, oh, I know how you feel. I'm like, but you don't really know because both of your parents are still living. I just lost my dad. And I never got to go visit the place where my dad was from, which was Curaçao, off the tip of Venezuela, because we always went to St. Vincent and the Grenadines, the West Indies, where my mom is from. So,
did he lose him to COVID?
No. It was a combination of medical negligence and some other things. And he did go to the hospital during COVID. And there was a lot of things that got overlooked during that time because the hospital was a lot, you know, during that time, a lot of people were focused on COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you for asking that question. And I hope it gave you a little bit more insight on my why. And now the other part is I do it now for my daughter too. So my dad and my daughter, she's one now. So she's my motivation as well.
Okay.
So now I want to switch gears into one of your subject matter expertise, which is DEI in the space of medical and et cetera. Because I feel like DEI, which is, y'all, diversity, equity, inclusion, and then sometimes people often forget about the B, and the B is a sense of belonging. And I think DEI as a metric of health in a society, I think that's very important for us to focus on because it often goes overlooked and as well as underlooked, in my opinion. So from your vantage point, how important is DEI to the work that you're doing in the medical field as well as outside of that field?
Now, DEI is now a very fashionable buzzword. Everyone wants to use it. They usually pair it with another three letters, ESG, which is environmental, social, and governance. And big companies, both DEI and ESG, go hand in hand. But the like everything else, it's become a fad. But it is very important. But it is basically old wine in new bottles. Essentially, it is the recognition that that human beings are connected species. And we cannot achieve our fullest potential if we exclude portions of our community from the business of being human. So when you have humanity as such, as one connected tribe, then automatically you begin to realize that if you are going to say that this whole human endeavor that we are engaged in collectively as a human race on this planet will only work for a certain group of people and certain subsets are not part of that endeavor, then what actually happens is that the people that you try to include also end up being excluded in the process. And even though they may think that they are winning, they are actually losing in the long run. So diversity in my mind is not an option. It is not a nice to have or a good to have or a moral standpoint. It is actually necessary for human existence. It is not, unfortunately, it is still not being seen as necessary because the rewards of diversity are not immediate and upfront. They are more distant. So people can go for several years without experiencing the lack, the cost of lack of diversity. So as a result, people can forget that they really are losing out on some value by being not diverse.
Yeah, and I could definitely see that in the fields that I've worked in. I worked in oil and gas and energy for 12 years, and then I recently switched over to the healthcare sector after losing my dad for various reasons. And sometimes I feel in those, in certain organizations and industries, they see it as a means of checking the box to show their shareholders that they're diverse, they're equitable, they're inclusive. But whenever you become so robust in something, you really forget to drill down to the granular and the why you're doing certain things. And if you don't connect to the why and it's not evident on the forefront, and your employees aren't seeing that, then those employees begin to check out, and then you lose that portion of diversity as well as equity and inclusive because you're so busy just trying to check a box and fulfill certain requirements. And I feel like sometimes we as a society end up putting profits over people versus people over profits is how I see things. And then also in the healthcare sector, sometimes you see treatment disparities between certain people of color as well as people without color. Then you see it with people who have insurance versus no insurance. Depends on what communities they're a part of. Is the clinics, the hospital, and et cetera in a wealthy community, or is it in a area where, you know, people are using public transportation and et cetera, and look at the quality of care. And I could go deeper into this, but this is your area of expertise. So what else do you think that we as a society and each human being, because I think each one of us should be accountable to doing something when it comes to DEI. And correct me if I'm wrong, where do you see that we could get some more traction around this and where people could really be connected to this subject?
So there is the big problem here is authenticity. So when you have a company that says, all right, where diverse, the top-down management says, hey, we need to reach certain goals in diversity, equity, inclusion for our shareholders. In our shareholder meeting, we can't have this. So then the top management says that. So usually the CEO or the chairman of the company makes a statement. And he may believe it deeply, but when he says it he makes that statement without DEI in his words. I'll tell you, I'll explain that. When you make a statement, okay, we're going to need to increase our diversity, equity, inclusion, and you make it like a command, you are already not being equitable or inclusive in the way you execute your demand for diversity. So if I tell you that, hey, I'm the boss of this company, and I decide that we are not diverse, and Amaris, I want you to go and get some diversity, start putting some things in. But I never take time to find out what is your idea of diversity? What is your idea? How would you think? Because I don't have the time and the energy to invest in just investigating the tier just below me, what their cultural value for DEI is. And I just give them the command to do DEI like a command. Then DEI does not become a living thing. It becomes an object that needs to be done.
Wow, that's a powerful statement, because coming from the top down, that person is then giving out commands, or sometimes I say barking out orders, and the people at the bottom are the one who's already on the ground doing the work. So they have more knowledge and insight to really see what's going on. So technically they should meet in the middle to really have those synergies in that sweet spot. Because how many times do those leaders at the top get down to the quote unquote grassroots to really understand what's going on at that level?
So here comes the question then. When you talk about diversity, equity, inclusion, people don't understand diversity, equity, inclusion as on the basis of either a color, a gender, or an orientation. Whereas I see DEI differently. I see DEI as diversity of human potential. So when you have a management saying that we need to be more diverse in our workforce representation, they are just looking at what is the diversity in skin color or in gender or in sexual orientation as a measure of diversity.
And it's much more deeper than that. Exactly.
So if you start orienting DEI on basis of human potential, then you really are not concerned so much about how that potential looks like, dresses like, or behaves like. As long as you are able to use the product of that human being in a way that enhances the culture of the company. There are very, very few companies that approach DEI from the aspect of how I described it. And that is the dialogue that needs to happen in DEI.
And how do you think that the companies that, in your opinion, are doing it right and they're approaching it from that standpoint, how can they help other companies who are aspiring to do something similar?
So there are a few companies that are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You start with conversations, and the conversations always starts with a small group of people. So I always like to have conversations be in groups of no bigger than five. And I have a little bit of superstition because we have five fingers. So whenever you have a conversation going more than five, then the conversation gets bogged down in trivialities. But five people, you can have a productive conversation. So if you want to institute, if I was a consultant in approaching to a company, I would say, I would start breaking down the company into groups of five. and start looking at how do you do diversity with your group of five? How would you do it? How another group of five, another group of five. If it's a 200 people company, then you break them into groups of five. You make break them into 40 groups of five. And each one of those 40 groups start bringing. Then those 40 groups, those five member teams, you bring five of those five member teams together. So now you have 25 people who have individually come up with their DEI ideas. Now they bring these 25 teams members come, and another 25, and another 25. Another, now you have eight 25 member teams developing. Now you can start coalescing into a company-wide culture.
Okay. I think that's a powerful idea. And the reason why, because in smaller groups, more people are open to talking more, whereas in a big setting, people are going to just jump on the bandwagon with whosever idea is the loudest out there. And there may be someone who has something relevant to say, but they may be afraid or, you know, shy to speak up. And I'm just saying that just from
even in this groups of five. Even in this group of five, you'll have dynamics. You'll have some people who try to take center stage. They will try to dominate the conversation. And that's just human nature. And what you do is you steer that. You don't crush it. You don't destroy it. You just recognize that it is natural behavior that will come. And you just redirect it. You create spaces. So you allow, for example, in a group of five, let's say you have one who's dominating the conversation, you create a space where you can allow the dominating conversation to happen, but you stand like a buffer and allow for other conversations to also happen. And you do it without crushing the dominating conversation, because the dominating conversation, eventually you will need that also.
Would you say that you could use that dominant person to be the spokesperson to
not always out? Not always. They have to earn the right to be a spokesperson, but you can recognize that dominant person without crushing them. And you allow other people, and then you bring the dominant person also in, and then you give space and validation for both. It's mediation, and you do it in a very subtle way. You do it with compassion.
Okay. So for those of you listening out there, if you're looking for some pointers to take back, you know, grab some of the nuggets that we're dropping right now. What are your thoughts on ERGs, which are those employee resources groups that we now see at various companies and industries across wide? Do you think they're beneficial?
Employee resource groups? Yeah, I'm sure they'll be beneficial. See, I work at a much more core level. When I work with people, I say, see, why don't we talk like humans? Why don't we talk, you know, companies are, for some reason, companies love alphabet soup jargons. They love these three-letter labels of things, ESG, ERG, DEI. They love that. The military is even worse. They love that, and somehow they use these acronyms as a substitute for real progress. I can get more DEI by placing my hand on somebody's shoulder than having a 30-minute conversation. So you use the word be for belonging.
Yes.
See, when you have belonging, you automatically have DEI. You don't need to try to create DEI when people belong. DEI is about belonging. How do you make a person belong? If somebody is not being excluded, they automatically belong. And the only way they can belong is if they feel a sense of A, validating, being validated, and being productive. If they feel that they coming into work allows them to do something of value, give something of value to something bigger than who they are, not just come here so that they can see. If somebody just comes to work and at the end of the day, all he feels is that he got a paycheck, you okay?
Yeah, this subject gets a bit emotional sometimes because it's so powerful.
So, see, if a lady comes to work and all they get out of work is a paycheck, that person is no different than somebody who sells their body for money. You just made that person into a person with no value. If the only thing a person gets out of the work they do is the paycheck they take home at the end of the month, you just made them into a prostitute.
Wow. No one has mentioned that or looked at it that way. And you know, that's a profound statement, because how many times do we really own in on that? Like, what's the value that you get from doing the work that you're doing, and how can you truly say that you're leaving an imprint to drive an impact?
See, my staff in my clinic, my clinic is a top doctor clinic. We have been top doctor clinic since 2012. Every year we have won the award. My clinic is owned by my staff. They own it. It is theirs. It's not Dr. Iyer's clinic. It is called the Iyer Clinic. My name is on the board, but it is not my clinic. It is their clinic. They own it. And because right from day one, I said, the salary you take is the least you should get from the clinic. And they are paid well. And they are rewarded. I have policies in my office. I'll give you some ideas about policies that we do. Don't have to do it exactly the way I do it. Every company has to start their own. For example, every one of my staff get one Friday off by rotation. So every month they have a long weekend. They have a Friday, Saturday off. Every one of them gets that. All right. Every one of my staff get one day of the week where they go home early. That means that on that day, see my clinic, for example, I work. I work from 8 o'clock to 12 o'clock. Then 12 to 2 is lunch. Then 2 to 4, we see patients again. 12 to 2 is a 2-hour lunch, but it's not that I'm eating lunch for 2 hours. In 2 hours, I'll be catching up on messages, doing something. But what we do is every Thursday, I tell my staff, don't give me lunch. Don't give me my lunch break. Work me nonstop from 8 o'clock till 2 o'clock. So instead of working from 2 to 4, I'll work 8 a.m. to I won't take my 2-hour break from 12 to 2. I'll work 12 to 2, and we can shut the clinic down at 2 o'clock, and you guys can go home. So guess what happens? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they work all the way till 5. All right. And then on Thursday, they have early release. So they're able to take care of the rest of their life. They work, they got some teacher appointments or school, something that they can take care of it between 2 to 5.
And right? I like that, because it helps them with work and home life balance, where yeah. You're weaving that then, in.
And it doesn't shortchange the need of the clinic to generate revenue.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then on Friday, they again have a regular day. And then they have Saturday, Sunday break again. So they actually are more refreshed when they come and work. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they work a hard day. Then Thursday is an early release. Then Friday, a hard day. Then Saturday, Sunday break. And then again, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, hard day. All right. So that's easy. Then every fourth week, they have a Friday off.
Okay.
So I have five staffers. And so to do that, all five of them can do everybody else's work also. So everyone has their own job that they are. Mm-hmm. Plus, they are good at every other job 90% of the time.
That is very, very impressive. And audience, I hope that you adopt some of these if they work for you. And if not, we're just going to stop with those tips right there. But I don't want Dr. Ayer to give away all of his tips, because I definitely want him to interject his call to action so we could wind down our segment. So Dr. Ayer, I know these are amazing tips, and I don't want you to share all your secret sauce with them, because they have to do their homework too. I always give homework. What is your call to action for our audience today? Meaning, what's something that you want them to adopt after hearing this segment, and how can they connect with you to learn more about what you're doing, your book, and et cetera?
So I just started my second act of my life. I'm 65 years old. So this is my second act. My second act is I'm going to be a physician for the rest of my life. I'm not going to stop doing that. But during the pandemic, I suddenly realized that diversity, equity, and inclusion is more important than I previously thought it was. Because the pandemic showed me how we were getting torn apart. So my second act, which I started, begins with my website. So if you want to follow me and what I do, just go to www.driyer.com, and you can follow me, follow my book, follow my blog, follow my other podcasts and other presentations, and you can collect all the rest of my secret sauce out there.
See, y'all, it pays to listen, because there's a lot of gems out there that Dr. Ravi Ayer has to share. So don't just see him as a physician. See him as more than a physician, because he has so much knowledge and wisdom to leave with the world, and he's not done yet, because this is his second act. Dr. Ravi, I want to thank you so much for coming on GEMS Podcast and sharing and holding space as we talk about this powerful subject. And I'm going to leave the audience with this. DEI is more than just what society makes it seem. Go beyond the surface level whenever you meet and connect with the individual, and get to know who they are at the core, what they do, how what they do can intertwine with what you do, and go from just making things just a mere connection to making it a lifelong connection, and have those touch points that spread far and beyond, because each one of us was created on a purpose, for a purpose, and it's to make and leave a legacy. I am Miss Genesis Amaris Kemp, the founder and host, and you just had the pleasure of hearing Dr. Ravi Ayer. And be sure to grab a copy of The Reader's Dance, 1,000 Days of COVID, because hey, COVID is still here, even though you may think that it's gone. Until next time, make sure you like, comment, and subscribe to the podcast. It's available on 40 plus platforms, and it's currently ranked in the top 1.5% globally as of this week.
Wow.
So check us out and continue to support. Let me know if you want to hear any other topics. And remember, feedback is a gift. So when you leave that review, good, bad, and ugly, because that's going to help me improve. Until next time, peace, love, and happy cakes.
Thank you.